All right, America, it's time for your news by the numbers. Tonight's number is 35. Yes, indeed. President Trump's approval rating in a new CNN poll stands at 35%, dropping 5% over the last month. This drop follows a January bump in approval for the president, a finding that appears to be connected to the bullish stock market and stronger views of the economy. In light of the school shooting in Florida, uncertainty over high-profile departures at the White House, and the ongoing Russia probes, this thing is not looking good for President Trump, and let's talk about it. So here's the tea on this one. This president has never seen a positive approval rating, ever. Period. Game over. But what we have seen over the past couple months is an uptick in the president's approval, one, because of the tax reform. Now, I'm gonna be real with you. I'm not the biggest fan of this tax reform bill, but I understand why the American people are really liking it. Injecting money into the economy, people seeing, people getting bonuses, the ideal that your overall tax rate has gone down is very popular amongst the American people. But we all know, as any economist will tell you, pumping that much money into the market when our economy's overall doing well could lead to inflation. And so we will see in a couple months with the new Fed chair likely raising interest rates to cool the market down, which is why we shouldn't have passed the tax cut to begin with. But I digress. Back to his approval rating. Like I said, we've never seen his approval rating be positive. It's always been negative. But right now, I gotta tell you, this White House is in what I would like to call implosion mode. Lord Jesus, take the wheel. Not only do we learn this week of Hope Hicks' departure from the White House, but we also know that Paul Manafort has pleaded guilty to more charges. His business partner, Rob Gates, has also said he's gonna cooperate with the FBI. Jared Kushner's security clearance has been downgraded. We also know new reporting shows that Jared Kushner has been talking to individuals and using the White House to get financing for his buildings. This White House is in implosion mode. And so let's dig into these numbers a little bit more to really find out what's happening. Trump's approval rating is low amongst Republicans, and that's a big deal. So what you want for any president is you want him to have over 80% within his own party, no matter what's happening. For the first time since President Trump has taken office, his approval rating amongst Republicans only stands at 80%, an all-time low, meaning 20% of Republicans, 20% of his own party fellow colleagues, sons and daughters, husbands and wives, Republicans are saying no go on Mr. Trumpo. That is bad news bears to President Trump, because he depends on his base to care. He depends on his base over and over and over again. And because he hasn't tried in the past 12 months to expand his base, all he's got is Republicans. Or are Republicans, rather. And so an 80% drop in that number should scare the White House and should scare Republican members of Congress as we inch closer and closer to the midterm elections. Because remember, the president's approval rating is pegged to what will happen in November. So no matter how good the economy is doing, the president's approval rating is a big indicator on how his party will fare in the midterm elections. And with being at an all-time low of 80%, just about 8 or 9 months out from this midterm elections, speaks bad news bears to Republicans. So I'm pretty sure House Republicans are nervous Nellies with the president's low approval rating and the amount of retirements that they've had on the Republican side of the aisle in the House of Representatives. This could be a bloodbath in the midterm elections. Digging deeper into the numbers, we also see the approval rating for the president stands at just 5% amongst Democrats and 35% amongst independents. I want to talk about this independents number. The Democrat number, not so much. Democrats don't like him. Moving on. But this independent number is very big because for this president to win re-election in 2020 and for Republicans to win the midterm elections coming up, it is going to require them to woo independents to their side to vote for them. And with a 35% approval rating amongst independent voters, Jesus take the wheel for the Republican Party. You gotta also think about, and I know people are saying, Richard, I know we're gonna get some comments below. I know that people are gonna be like, Richard, you just hate Donald Trump. And to be fair, that is actually not true. If you watch any of my journalistic work, you will know that if this president does something that's good, we at the Fowler Show will applaud him. We've done it before, we will do it again. I am not afraid to cross the aisle and applaud Republicans for doing the right things, just like I'm not afraid to cross the aisle and condemn Democrats for doing bad things. But let's look at this president's approval rating amongst his colleagues or former presidents. President Trump stands 12 points behind the previous low mark of 47% set by Ronald Reagan at this point in 1982 and by Jimmy Carter in early 1978. So his approval rating is 12 points lower than both Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan at this time in their presidency. And amongst women, which is very important, the president has a 29% approval rating, meaning America. Almost 70% of women disapprove of President Trump's presidency. And that is compared with 42% of men. So he's in the water when it comes to women. He's in the water when it comes to men. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere.
Fight to win. Stand up straight. No debate. Push by hate. Concentrate. Penetrate. Generate. Motivate. Live by faith. Keep believing. I know the reason. It's the season. Now's the time. Keep on dreaming. Keep on leading. And keep on fighting.
I am fighting for the liberation of voices with something to say. Like many before me, for glory, you'll have to stand in harm's way. I'm no savior, just a soldier. Soldier with an order. So I have no choice but to trust the God, cause it must be done. Yeah. And my only fear is what might happen if I didn't fight to win. If I lose, then
good night, America, and welcome to The Fowler Show. It's your boy, Richard Fowler. As always, here on The Fowler Show, we're here to inform you, to empower you, and help you get your voice back. Tonight's show, no different. You can join our movement by going to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Fowler Show, or checking out our podcast. Go to iTunes and Google, and I was going to say Google, and search Fowler Show. We want to hear from you. We want you to be part of this movement. It is nothing, absolutely nothing without you. And let's get right to our reality check. After the devastating shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, Americans are looking for answers about gun control and how to keep our kids safe. But while this debate rages on, President Trump's White House continues to fly under the radar and work behind the scenes to carry out its agenda in a way that is underreported by mainstream media. And we are going to cover it. So let's see what you missed this week in Trump land. The first thing, the State Department is scaling back language on women and discrimination. Yes, indeed, America, it is true. The State Department has always been the olive branch to the world for American diplomacy, American democracy, and human rights. Not so much under President Trump. The State Department is set to release an annual report on human rights across the globe, but Trump's team is going to be quietly defining some of those rights. Officials at the State Department have been ordered to pare back language about women's reproductive rights and discrimination, strip entire passages about family planning and access to contraception and abortion, and slash another section dealing with the discrimination of individuals based on race, sex, and gender identity. Now, here's why this matters in the grand scheme of things. There's one acronym that I want to talk to you about when it comes to scaling back this language. It is called PEPFAR. PEPFAR is a bill that was passed under George W. Bush, and it was a bill that was utilized to really put America's footprint in Africa as a human rights hero. What this bill did was gave tons of money to fight the HIV/AIDS crisis and to stabilize many economies in Africa. But under President Obama, there was a move in PEPFAR to increase contraception as a way to decrease the spread of HIV/AIDS on the continent. The fact that this White House is removing language around women's reproductive rights and discrimination, family planning, and access to contraception and abortion says to me that this State Department is erasing not only the achievements that we've had in PEPFAR, but beyond that, they're erasing the impact that PEPFAR has. Because here's the truth. The reason why the HIV/AIDS transmission rate is down in Africa is because of the PEPFAR bill and the PEPFAR law. But that law also says that abstinence only isn't the way to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS. The best way to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS, America, is pretty simple. It's called a condom. And so when you omit the access to sexual, to family planning and the access to contraception, what you're saying is you don't see access to these things as a human right, when we all know that it is a human right. And beyond that, the fact that this particular section also takes out discrimination based on race, ethnicity, and sex all speaks to a larger problem. Now, while Nikki Haley was great at the United Nations condemning Russia's treatment of the LGBTQ community, the fact that this is not included in the Human Rights Report will allow some of these bad actors all across the world to continue to discriminate and kill people of the LGBTQ community, and America will say nothing about it. We are the city on the hill. We are the world's largest democracy, and we've got to stand up for the little guy. And the fact that this is being omitted from the Human Rights Report should shock every American. Moving on. At the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service, here's what they've done. They've removed a nation of immigrants from their mass, from their mission statement. So what the mission statement used to say, we are a nation of immigrants, and now it reads, securing America's promise, securing America's promise as a nation of immigrants. The new mission statement now states, administering the nation's lawful immigration system, safeguarding its integrity, and promise by efficiently and fairly adjudicating requests for immigration benefits while protecting Americans and securing the homeland and honoring our values. So the omission of this ideal that we're a nation of immigrants speaks to what maybe Omarosa has been saying since she's left the White House. In an interview yesterday with Stephen Colbert, Omarosa indicated that there will be mass roundups of immigrants, those that are illegal. And maybe she's right. And maybe by removing this language, this White House is making it very clear that even though we're a nation of immigrants, they don't seem to care about it. Moving on. At the Department of Health and Human Services, they are now putting what we like to call here at the Fowler Show, junk policies, healthcare plans, into the Affordable Care Act exchange market. The president has been laser focus on dismantling and destroying the Affordable Care Act, which has been America's access to affordable health care and preventative health care. But in a new proposed rules that will allow Americans to seek health insurance by purchasing skimpier, cheaper plans without the basic coverage protections required under the ACA, this move could endanger the Affordable Care Act marketplace exchange as more consumers purchase cheaper plans, thus raising the cost on more expensive and more comprehensive plans, number one, and number two, hurting the Americans who have these cheaper plans. Like, just imagine buying one of these junk plans or junk premiums, like we call them here at the Fowler Show, right? And then going to the emergency room and realizing it does nothing for you. It doesn't help you. It doesn't make your bill any cheaper. This is what the Republicans mean when they say they're going to give you more choice in the marketplace. And let's not forget that the Affordable Care Act and the ideal of the exchange was something created by the Heritage Foundation and implemented by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts just a couple years ago. America, you have got to follow the story on these, because these stories are devastating. While the president is over here trying to say he's going to fix the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting crisis, his administration is literally shredding the laws that have protected Americans for decades. And the last thing that happened this week while you weren't watching and the mainstream media wasn't covering it is what is going on with Jared Kushner at the White House. Now, everybody knows Jared Kushner is Ivanka's husband and a senior advisor to the president. We know that his security clearance has been downgraded because he couldn't fill out his forms correctly and because the FBI feels as though Jared Kushner could be influenced and blackmailed by foreign entities. Well, maybe the FBI was right when they raised the flag on Jared Kushner, because here is what we know today. that Kushner family businesses has received loans after these rich millionaires and billionaires had meetings at the White House. Yes, indeed, America, it is true. I'm talking about Josh Harris of Apollo Global Management, an advisor on infrastructure issues, met with Kushner several times last year. In November, Apollo, after meeting with Kushner at the White House, lent $184 million to the Kushner companies, tripling the size of the investment firm's average property loan. And they aren't alone. Citigroup CEO Michael Corbat met with Jared Kushner in the spring, and shortly thereafter, the bank lent the Kushner company $325 million. And lastly, while Kushner has partially divested, he still owns a substantial stake in Kushner companies and will profit off these deals. So basically what you have happening here is he's giving these millionaires and billionaires and these big banks tours of the White House and meeting with them about policy. Remember, this guy has the president's ear. He's the president's son-in-law and a senior advisor to the president. Right, he's also evaded having to have a security clearance for almost a year, viewing top secret documents, viewing the presidential daily briefing that includes sources and methods on how we collect our intelligence. And at the same time, Jared Kushner is also meeting with these millionaires and billionaires and these bankers. And then all of a sudden, after the meeting happens, money just starts to appear for the Kushner company. Now, we already know the Kushner company is a very shady organization. We know about what they did in New York. We know what we're doing when it comes to rent discrimination and America. We also know about their properties in Florida. Like, this guy is shady boots. And the fact that after going to the White House, he was able to raise almost $500 million for his company says to me that this is a pay for play. We'll follow all these stories for you to follow the show. We'll keep you updated. We'll be right back after this break.
Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard. Every night when I get home, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage, and that is why I prefer a tall glass of organic wine from the Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1972, the Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organically produced wines. They have a tremendous selection, red, white, sparkling, and dessert wines, and it's oh so tasty. It's easy and inexpensive to ship right to your door. For a limited time, you can get an even bigger savings by visiting ecowines.com and using the coupon code FowlerShow. Join the movement of good-tasting, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at the Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowines.com or give them a call, 1-888-ecowines.com. And don't forget to use that coupon code, FowlerShow, for your extra special discount. This is our movement, and more importantly, this is our community. Do you feel like your community is being left behind? Has your elected official neglected their constituents? It's time to get your voice back. It's time for your community to rise up. We want you to take a picture of what's wrong in your community and send it to photo@fowlershow.com or tweet it to us at @fowlershow. We want to help you advocate for yourself. We want to help you get your voice back. Your pictures will be featured on our blog. We might even take your issue up on our show. We are committed to your community. Now it's time for you to be committed as well. Go ahead, send the picture to photo@fowlershow.com or tweet it to us at @fowlershow. Remember, it's time for you to get informed, empowered, and get your voice back. Our community, our movement. Only on The Richard Fowler Show.
I'm a third grade teacher.
I'm a school bus driver.
I am a parent.
I am a teacher's aide. And I agree to be identified
as a caring adult who pledges to help bullied students.
I will listen carefully to all students who seek my help
and act on their behalf
to put an immediate stop to bullying.
I will work with other caring adults to create a safe
learning environment for all the students in my school.
In my school.
In my school.
In my school.
I'm Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association. Help us create safe, bully-free learning environments for all students. One caring adult can make all the difference. Be that adult and take the pledge at nea.org/bullyfree. Adults have the power to stop bullying in our schools.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
It starts with me.
Bully free. It starts with me.
Visit nea.org/bullyfree. A message from the National Education Association.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone. And we're back, and it's time for your political maniacs. Tonight's maniac, Hope Hicks. President Trump has just lost his 5th communications director in his 13-month presidency. Hope Hicks announced Wednesday that she plans to leave the White House in the next coming weeks. Hicks has warranted unwanted attention in recent weeks after being drawn into White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter's domestic abuse investigation. More recently, Hicks admitted to the House Intelligence Committee that she has occasionally told white lies for the president. Known as one of the few people that understand and could sway Donald Trump, what will the White House do as President Trump's people continue to drop like flies on a hot Sunday morning? Well, America, Hope Hicks. Out the door. A little bit of background on Ms. Hicks. So Hicks is a former model who joined the Trump presidential campaign without any experience in politics. Now, with that being said, before you go out and you call me and you say I'm being unfair, it is true that Hicks was the communications director for all the Trump brands, starting with Ivanka Trump's clothing line and moving on to the full Trump company. And how the story is told, President Trump approached Hope Hicks when he was then candidate Trump and said, Hope, have you ever worked in politics before? She said, no. He said, great, you're gonna be my press secretary. These are the facts, just telling you like it is. In the past year, Hicks has come under scrutiny during the investigation into Russia interference in 2016 election, and she's also come under fire of Robert Mueller and of the fact that she was romantically engaged to Rob Porter, the former White House staff secretary, prior to his dismissal for beating two of his former wives. Welp, that didn't stop Republicans on the House from finding a reason to say that the Russia investigation just isn't working or isn't getting to the bottom of anything. Let's take a listen to Florida GOP Representative Tom Rooney and what he said about the Russia investigation following the announcement of Hope Hicks' departure from the White House.
And that's why tonight I've asked our chairman, Conaway, that we need to end this investigation. It's been going on for a year. We've interviewed scores of witnesses, and now we've gotten to the point now where we're literally bringing people in for 9 hours just so the Democrats can leak to the press something as ridiculous as white lies, not having anything to do with the Russia investigation.
Now, before we get into this comment, let's just think about let's ask the question that you're probably asking at home. What the hell is happening at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? Now, the job of a communications director is to steer the White House's communications with the American people. Their job is to keep the White House focused on one message. It is to create message discipline and is to move the president's agenda forward with the American people via communications. Since President Trump has taken office, he has lost 5 communications directors. He's lost Sean Spicer. Following Sean Spicer, there was, I can't remember his name now. there was that guy who was there for not long enough for you to even remember. Then, remember that we had the Mooch? Remember the Mooch? You remember the Mooch. And now we have Hope Hicks. Trump has also lost Steve Bannon, Reince Priebus, Katie Walsh, and Mike Flynn, KT McFarlane, Sergio Gorka, and the list goes on and on and on of former Trump White House folks that no longer work there. And oh, let's not forget a person that goes by one name, Omarosa. So this White House clearly has a problem, and clearly the pressures of running the country has gotten to some of Trump's most trusted staff members, including Hope Hicks. Now, the role that Hope Hicks played, people say that Hope Hicks has been like a surrogate daughter to the president. People say Hope Hicks is one of the few people that could get into Trump's head and stopped him from sending out bad tweets versus good tweets. And she's also been able, if you gotta give her credit, I give credit where credit is due. For the past couple months, Hope Hicks has managed to keep this White House, partially together. Think about it. When they had Infrastructure Week, it lasted for 2 days. If she wasn't there, they would never had Infrastructure Week. So let's just be real about it. But now we know that she will no longer be there. And the reason why Hope Hicks' departure is so mysterious is because if there was anybody in the Trump organization that would have known about the Russia collusion, it would have been Hope Hicks, because she's literally been there since day one. She was working on the campaign during the Don Jr. meeting with the Russians at Trump Tower. She was working on the campaign during the constant leaking of Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee's emails. She was working at the campaign when President Trump, whether tongue-in-cheek or purposefully, said at a press conference when he called on Russia to find the rest of Hillary Clinton's emails. She was there for all of it. And she was likely there. She was probably working at the Trump organization when they signed various deals with Russian oligarchs. Some of those Russian oligarchs who have been part of a Robert Mueller indictment for interfering in our 2016 election and in trying to destroy our democracy. So Hope Hicks knows a lot. And then she goes down to the House Intelligence Committee this week. And when she goes down to the House Intelligence Committee and she's grilled by members of Congress, because it is the job of the House Intelligence Committee to hold the White House accountable for their actions. And don't get me wrong, America. Don't get me wrong. I find both the House and the Senate Russia investigations to be problematic for various reasons. On many sides of the aisle, Republicans have screwed this up, Democrats have screwed this up. That is where I am bipartisan. And I think the House Intelligence Committee has absolutely, positively no credibility. But with that being said, herein lies my problem with Hope Hicks's testimony. Hope Hicks, the communication director for the President of the United States, Hope Hicks, a surrogate daughter for the president, Hope Hicks, one of the highest ranking members of this White House and a communications director that has had the most access to a president of the United States in recent American history. All these things, right? That same Hope Hicks admits under oath that she sometimes tells white lies for the president of the United States. Now herein lies my problem, the word white lies. White lies to some are different than white lies to others. So for example, a white lie I might use and I've used before to my production team here at the Fowler Show is I'll be there in 5 minutes and I show up 15 minutes later. That is a white lie. I define it as white lie. But then again, if I were to say, oh, we never colluded with the Russians, that would not be a white lie. But there's so much ambiguity in the word white lie that it would cause some to question Hope Hicks's integrity as the communications director, and would also cause one to question what truth and what non-truths are coming from this White House. Here's what we know. We know in the past 13 months of this presidential and this in the Donald Trump presidency, he's lied over 2,000 times to the American people. So which one of those lies are white lies and which one aren't white lies? Is it, well, the president said that, you know, the murder rate here is at a 20th year high. Was that a white lie? Or is it, there's no collusion in all capitals. Is that a white lie? We really don't know. And that's what makes this Hope Hicks revelation so scary to the American people. Yeah, that one shocked you, but it's true. Be right back after this break.
So Veronique, thank you all for joining us today. So tell me, what is the Organic Wine Company?
The Organic Wine Company is something I founded out of the depths of my heart some 30 years ago, if you can believe it, because of my passion for the earth, my passion for my terroir, the land of my ancestors.
Now tell me, how is organic wine made differently than regular wine?
Generally speaking, an organic wine has to be made with grapes that are grown organically. An organic tomato is a tomato that's grown without pesticides, herbicides, or any kind of chemical fertilizers and such. And so grapes grown organically are grown that way as well, without those chemicals. Conventional wines, on the other hand, may be grown with all sorts of pesticides and herbicides and other chemical adjuvants, and then once in the cellar, may be made with all sorts of other chemicals. I'm excited to be following in the footsteps of Tom Hartmann and doing something before it's too late, giving people a wonderful wine to celebrate with, to celebrate their life and their friends and our planet in a way that is completely sort of congruent. Then I have wines that represent that code of honor in a bottle. You can call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. And look for us at www.theorganicwinecompany.com. Better even, you should call me, Veronique, and talk to me and get to know those wines personally. And we carry about 100 by now, a whole range of from Merlot to Cabernets to Chardonnays to all sorts of things from different countries and also from California.
Breast health awareness is critical for all women, particularly African Americans, because we have an increased risk of dying from breast cancer compared to women of other backgrounds. At U of M, I'm doing research here and with women in Ghana to look for an inherited link that makes African and African American women susceptible to a more aggressive type of cancer. Finding this link, I believe, will make new treatments possible. But right now, making sure that you are properly screened is our best protection.
With experts like Dr. Lisa Newman, the University of Michigan Health System is a leader in cancer care. When you call our free Cancer Answer line at 800-865-1125, an oncology nurse will answer any questions you might have about the prevention, screening, and treatment of breast cancer and other forms of cancer. All calls are confidential. Call 800-865-1125 or visit uofmhealth.org/cancer-answer-line.
We're working to help everyone enjoy longer, healthier lives.
That's the Michigan difference.
Say you want to go to college.
Yay!
A Big Ten college.
Yeah!
But you don't want to feel like part of the, well, you know. Is there an answer for you? Of course. Indiana University East.
Go Rebels!
Indiana University East. You'll get the quality of a Big Ten education in a small college setting. IU East offers more than 50 fields of study, from accounting to political science, taught by internationally recognized faculty with an average of 18 students per class. So it's not student number 95A-6273, please report to... It's more like, hey, John, welcome to class. Best of all, you'll graduate with one of the most respected degrees anywhere, a degree from IU. Don't wait. Go to iue.edu... or call 800-959-EAST to arrange a visit to Indiana University East. IU. Focused on you.
The Richard Fowler Show is completely and totally interactive, so go ahead, give us a call, 202-573-8737, or tweet us at Fowler Show. Remember, this movement is nothing without you, so pick up that phone.
And we're back on The Fowler Show. It's time for one of my favorite segments, The Washington Whisperer. And tonight's Wash and Whisper takes us all the way to the state of California. The 2018 California Democratic Convention was full of drama this year. Before U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein could finish her speech, the music began to play to indicate that she had used up her allotted time. "I guess my time is up," Feinstein conceded. The crowd responded with chants, "Time is up! Time is up!" A fitting response for a group that would go on not to endorse the 84-year-old senator's bid for re-election. What does this mean for Dianne Feinstein, a rank-and-file Democrat? What does this mean for the Democratic Party of California? What does this mean for Democrats nationwide? Welp, don't worry. We have the answers here for you at this Fowler Show episode tonight. Yes, indeed, America, it is true. The California Democratic Party went on not to endorse Dianne Feinstein, which is a first time in a long time for the longtime senator who typically showed up at the party state convention, but actually had to actively work to earn her support this time. Here's the interesting thing about this. I really do believe, now mind you, Feinstein was first elected to the United States Senate in 1992. But now, the people of California are saying we've had enough. And maybe, just maybe, California speaks largely of where the Democratic Party is now. In 2016, we ran a candidate who was the heir apparent, it was her time, remember that I'm with her? And then the American people rejected that. Not only did far left Democrats and the progressive movement reject that notion by endorsing and fighting for Bernie Sanders, but we now learn from Donna Brazile's book, Hacks, and other information that literally the old school Democratic Party rigged the system to ensure that Hillary Clinton would become the nominee. But Hillary Clinton's campaign, America, didn't pass the smell test for the American voter. And they overwhelmingly rejected Hillary Clinton in exchange for Donald Trump. Now, I know some progressives and some Hillary fights will respond to this video by saying, well, she won the popular vote. And yes, indeed, you are correct. So did Al Gore. Mind you, Al Gore was robbed. Hillary Clinton was not robbed. Hillary Clinton was not robbed. Period. Donald Trump won this presidency fair and square because Hillary was a horrible candidate who felt like she never had to campaign. Which brings us to the case of Dianne Feinstein, somebody who has been in Congress so long that she doesn't feel like she has to campaign. Well, now she's gotten a rude awakening from California Democrats who have made it clear that we're not sure if Dianne is going to be here to stay for six more years. Now, Feinstein has held she's held the seat since 1992, and her main rival is Senate Leader Kevin DeLano. Kevin DeLeon. It's been a long night here at the Fowler Show. He garnered 54% of the vote. DeLeon has mounted a campaign running to the left of Feinstein and has rallied progressives and labor activists who are saying we need a member of Congress and a U.S. senator that's willing to go to the Senate and fight for working class people. And Dianne ain't it. Now, that's very interesting because, I mean, this is somebody who usually wins her elections by a landslide. But not so much in this case. So Feinstein's team actively courted the 3,400 delegates who voted on the endorsement. Her campaign sent out mailers to delegates. They held conference calls the day before the convention. But none of that stopped the avalanche against Dianne Feinstein and her bid to get reelected. It is very obvious the Democratic Party is moving to the left. But maybe, just maybe, America, might not be the Democratic Party is moving to the left, and it may be the Democratic Party is looking for new faces and new voices to move our party forward. And I want to believe the latter more than the former. Because I don't think the party has moved at all. I think what old school Democrats have forgotten to do is define who we are as a party and what we stand for. And that is where that's why you have this spiral of the Democratic Party. And I mean, it's very clear. Everybody knows that Trump wants to build the wall. Everybody knows that Trump wants to pass an infrastructure bill. But I ask the question, do you know what Democrats want to do? And many of you are looking puzzledly at this video or looking at your radio and saying, you know, Richard, I don't have an answer to that question. And you're absolutely right, because Democrats haven't clearly defined their message. And it's not only Dianne Feinstein's fault, it's also Nancy Pelosi's fault. and Chuck Schumer's fault. When we shut the government down for DACA, we were like, oh, we didn't shut the government down, but we did, and we shut it down for DACA, and we should just have said that. We are a party, America, that believes in working families. We are a party that believes the system has been rigged for far too long and the ladders of opportunity are broken for far too many Americans, especially those living in our rural and urban communities. We are a party that believes that every American should be able to have a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. We are a party that believes that the cost of prescription drugs are far too high for far too many people, and we've got to lower that. We are a party that believes that every American should be able to go to the doctor and never have to worry about the bill. We are a party that believes in investing in America's future by funding public education and ending the raid on the public coffers being taken out by charter schools and voucher programs. We are a party that believes that every American should be judged by the content of their skin and not their color, not their creed, or their citizenship status. But sadly, as clear as I am in articulating our message, Democrats in the House and Democrats in the Senate have not been so clear. They've waffled and they've wavered on issue after issue after issue. They've sold out to big interests. They've sold out to big lobbyists. They've sold out to millionaires and billionaires. They've put our American young men and women that defend our democracy in harm's way for absolutely no reason in both the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. And Dianne Feinstein is the poster child for a Democratic Party that is aimless and lacks direction. It's not that our party is moving too far to the left. It's that Dianne Feinstein is just out of the mainstream of what our party is currently. Our party used to be a good old boys club where the rich continued to get rich and the poor continued to get poor, but the Democrats paid lip service to the poor and paid money to the rich. But now the poor have had enough. Working families have had enough. The American people have had enough, and they want a party that has real answers to real problems. You don't have to take my word for it. Just look what's happening in West Virginia right now. In West Virginia, the schools have been shut down for over a week because the teachers there have had enough and they're sick and tired of millionaires and billionaires continuing to benefit off the system while their wages get lower and lower and lower and their healthcare costs get higher and higher and higher. And when you look at that, you ask yourself, where is Dianne Feinstein? Where is her voice as a California Democrat? And the answer is simple. Her voice is missing in action. She cares more about the parliamentary procedures of the United States Senate than she does her constituents. And that is why the people of California have overwhelmingly said, Dianne, we ain't too sure on you, girl. They said, Dianne, the rent is due and the rent is too damn high. They said, Dianne, it might be time for you to pack your bags in Washington and bring your behind back home to your retirement community. America, here is what I know. I know this one thing. If it wasn't for the Democratic Party and if it wasn't for labor unions, and I wouldn't be sitting here on this show today because I'm from a labor household. But why is it that our party is so afraid to embrace working families? And let me be very clear, because I think there's a distinction between labor union, like the labor union leadership and labor union membership. We've seen this over and over and over again. Just take a look at the 2016 election where labor union membership said, we don't want Hillary Clinton, and labor union leadership said, we're going to endorse Hillary Clinton overwhelmingly. This is part of the problem. The Democratic Party and the Democratic Party elites have missed the boat when it comes to where working families and regular Americans are. And that is where Donald Trump has been able to prey on working families and blue collar and white collar workers for that matter. But we as a party can get these groups back if we begin to have a conversation about what matters. While I do believe that we need to pass DACA, and we need to pass DACA not today, Not yesterday, not tomorrow. We need to pass DACA today. We cannot build our entire Democratic platform around DACA, because even if we make these DACA kids citizens of this country, they'll still have a hard time finding a job, and they'll still have student loan debt that's out the wazoo, and they'll still have to sit at that kitchen table and figure out how ends meet. We need to be the party of working families all across this country, no matter their color, their creed, or their citizenship. But it starts by having a conversation with these working families, figuring out their concerns, hearing their issues, and going to Washington and going to state capitol after state capitol after state capitol and trying to fix it.
Now, all I know is what I read on the internet. Today's headline, pot legal in 14 states for pain. Now, that takes a smoke break to a whole new level. Now, some companies might see this as a problem. And some, well, they might consider it as an incentive program, depending on the state. As far as I can see, and I'm concerned, it might become a state of confusion. Now, I see a few businesses that might have a problem with this new style of pain management. Restaurants, for one. The munchies, you know. They might be eaten out of house and home. Definitely eaten to their bottom line. Corporations, well, they might have a problem in meetings with uncontrollable laughing fits. Of course, the entertainment business will be fine, but for them it will be business as usual. I don't know about you folks, but I can think of a few jobs I would not want folks smoking marijuana for pain. My doctor, for one. Unless his name is Dr. Feelgood, and I'd like to know that ahead of time. The police. I don't want anyone getting that shoot first, ask questions thing later in their mind. Whatever happened to aspirin? Now, we might just allow some people to smoke out, like Michael Steele. Matter of fact, we might just fund the whole party. No pun intended. For them, it might calm them down a little. After all, what's the worst thing that could happen? They smoke, eat, laugh, and go to sleep. Now, that sounds like the Congress, if you ask me. Then again, who knows? You might be working with someone right now that's high. I mean, sometimes folks have accused me of being on something. Rest assured, folks, I'm just on a roll. All right, go to my website, willrogersusa.com.
Stop taking your politics so seriously. Listen to humorist Will Roberts Saturday night, 6 to 7 p.m. on We Act Radio, 1480 AM.
Hello, world. It's your boy, Richard Fowler. Every Friday after I've wrapped up the Richard Fowler Show, I find myself quite thirsty. Thirsty for an adult beverage. Not just any old adult beverage. I prefer a tall glass of one of my favorite fine wines. But not just any old wine either. I obviously demand wine that is super tasty. But I also require the wine I drink be good for the earth and kind to my body. That is why I only buy my wine from The Organic Wine Company. Founded in 1980, The Organic Wine Company is the nation's oldest importer of organic wines. They have a tremendous selection, reds, whites, sparkling, dessert wines, and it's easy and inexpensive to ship them all directly to your front door. Join the movement. The movement of health-conscious, earth-friendly wine drinkers, led by the fine folks at The Organic Wine Company. You can find them online at ecowine.com or give them a call at 1-888-ECO-WINE and tell them your boy Richard Fowler sent you.
I'm Gary Johnson, former governor of New Mexico. Last year, my state became the 12th state to allow medical use of marijuana by patients who are seriously ill. Some people were surprised that a Republican governor supports medical marijuana, but I'm hardly alone. Groups like the American College of Physicians, American Nurses Association, and American Public Health Association have all acknowledged the medical value of marijuana. New research about medical marijuana is coming out almost every day, showing remarkable potential in all sorts of serious conditions, including cancer, AIDS, and chronic pain. But some in government still want to put politics and ideology ahead of public health. To learn more about medical marijuana and what you can do to help, contact the Marijuana Policy Project at 1-877-JOIN-MPP or visit them on the web at mpp.org. Thanks.
And we're back here on The Fowler Show, and it's time for one of my favorite segments. Yes, indeed, America, it is true. Can we all just get along, as Martin Lawrence would say? Let's talk about it. New Jersey Democrats have proposed a new piece of legislation Monday that would allow people to vote while they are in prison. Like several other states, New Jersey does not allow felons to vote after their conviction, including while they're on probation or parole. If passed, the state would join just two other states, Vermont and Maine, in allowing inmates to cast a vote. The measure comes as a handful of other states are re-examining laws that disenfranchise prisoners, like in Florida, where more than 1.5 million people can't vote due to prior convictions. At a time when our democracy is under such attack, it is good to see that these New Jersey lawmakers are stepping up to do the right thing. I really do believe this one, because here's my thing. The whole job of our prison system, what it should be, and that's why it's called what it's called, is to correct. It's called corrections. In some states, it's called correction rehabilitation. But what you end up having is no correction, no rehabilitation, and recidivism rates that are through the roof. People leave jail and they come right back. It's like a revolving door at Macy's. Seriously, America. We've got to do something about it. And the one thing that we can do is do everything in our power to make these individuals citizens of a community once they return. Now, this Democratic proposal is very bold. Some might think it's out of mainstream. I understand that. I definitely understand that. But there is also something to be said about the ideal of having individuals who are part of our democracy vote. Like, I think this ideal that when you put somebody in jail, you can erase them from our society is just not true. And if you really think about it, that's what we've tried to do. We put people in jail, we label them as felons, and then we erase them from our society. And when you are unknown in a community, and when you're erased from society, there's only one thing for you to go back to: the crime that got you in jail in the first place. We should be doing everything in our power as a country to make sure that when prisoners enter jail, they never go back again. Let's take a listen to Republican Senator Gerald Cardinale and what he had to say about this particular voting law.
An absurdity.
Senator Jerry Cardinale is the ranking Republican on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He says it's okay to restore voting rights after someone finishes and fulfills his or her corrections commitment, but not before.
And think of the unintended consequence. Prison facilities are very frequently a lot of people. Forms a voting block. How would you like to say, I want to go and talk to the mayor? Oh, he's in cell 57. Come on, let's get real.
So here's my problem with this quote. There's two words he said there that was shocking to me. And the words are vote diluted. If you are an American citizen in this country and you live in America and you're part of a community and you pay taxes, or maybe you don't because you're poor, the idea that you would say that somebody, our vote gets diluted, you know what dilutes our vote, Senator? Voter suppression, that dilutes our vote. You know what dilutes our vote? Gerrymandering, that dilutes our vote, and that dilutes our democracy. What you are saying is not only wrong, but it's undemocratic. It's not what our founders really wanted, to be frank with you. Because to some of our greatest heroes in this country broke the law and committed crimes. People forget that when Rosa Parks sat down on the bus in Montgomery, Alabama, she broke the law. And at the time, she was a felon for breaking the law. People forget that the individuals that crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge 51 years ago broke the law. People forget that Martin Luther King broke the law. People forget that John Lewis broke the law. People forget that the individuals, the brave LGBTQ people in Stonewall broke the law. All these individuals under what our current society is today would be seen as felons and would be taken, their right to vote would be taken away. Too bad all those people that I mentioned, a lot of them have statues in our Congress and Statuary Hall. So this ideal and this notion that you can erase Americans because they've chosen to break the law is almost un-American, because we forget that our founders of this country broke the law. We forget that our founders, many of them were killed at the stakes. Many of them were beheaded for going or for having the Boston Tea Party and for breaking the law. They were felons. But if they weren't felons, we would not be the United States of America. So when you disenfranchise people for making mistakes or for breaking the law, you are going against everything that is American. People forget that in 1776, we were a ragtag group of thugs that created the 13 colonies, which eventually became the United States of America. It is so shocking to me how quickly people forget our history. My mom always used to say this to me. She would say, son, if you forgot where you came from, you'll forget where you're going. And I think those words cannot be truer today, because if you look at our Congress, you have a directionless Congress, because all of them have managed to forget where we came from. We came from a group of felons. We came from a group of lawbreakers. Harriet Tubman broke the law when she traveled and navigated to the South to free slave after slave after slave in the Underground Railroad. In this particular law, if Republicans were to have their way, Harriet Tubman would not be allowed to vote in this country. Not because she's black, but because she would have been a convicted felon if caught for breaking the law and freeing slaves via the Underground Railroad. Today, Harriet Tubman stands as one of the world's most prominent women in history. So let's be very clear about what you see happening here. The laws that stop felons to vote in New Jersey were created in 1844, almost 200 years ago. These laws are still in the books, and these laws are dictating our policy today. But over and over again, you see brave lawmakers, you see brave governors, you see brave senators, you see brave House of Delegates and legislatures stand up and say, we need change. Former Governor Terry McAuliffe unilaterally restored the voting rights on a case-by-case basis for over 172,000 former felons in the state of Virginia. According to one estimate, one in 13 voting age blacks are disenfranchised at a rate more than four times that of non-African Americans. Right now in Florida, in November, they will be, and we've talked about this on the fellowship before, there will be a ballot issue where the Floridians will be able to reinstate the right of over 1.5 million people who have done their time, they've paid their debt to society, they are now part of community. They are now living in our next doors. They are now paying taxes. Many of them own small businesses. They are everything that the correction system is supposed to do. They did their time. They committed a crime. They paid their time. They've rehabilitated themselves, and they're now part of community, thriving and growing, but yet they don't have the right to vote. America, the right to vote is fundamental. This weekend, we celebrate the commemoration of the walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge, where American citizens were savagely beaten for the right to vote, for the right to cast a ballot in America, the world's oldest and best democracy. And yet still, in the oldest and best democracy in the world, people are eliminated and people are stopped from participating in that democracy. This is a problem of epic proportion. Yes, the Russians have threatened our democracy, but so has state legislature after state legislature after state legislature, by stopping and suppressing the vote, by stopping people who have paid their debt to society from voting. This, America, is also a threat to our democracy. Let's be very clear. And this is a bipartisan issue on both sides of the aisle, on both some Democrats and reasonable Republicans agree that if you've paid your debt to society, you should have the right to vote. Republicans like Bob Dole have said it. Democrats like Terry McAuliffe have done it. And now it's time for the American people to catch up with them. That clock on the wall tells me it's time to go. But remember, I love you, but God loves you so much more than I do. Good night from Washington, everybody.